It's interesting to watch these queries because they follow along with the situation. You probably have heard of the South Sea Bubble. Terrific speculative affair that took in nearly everybody in Great Britain and they lost money in it. It was the big financial hoaxes. And soon after that, there came a query, are friends careful to avoid speculative enterprises? This is what this was. People invited to invest in something and then the whole bottom fell out of the venture. And now in more recent times, I might mention two groups. In England and America, during the time of the First World War, businessmen formed what they called the Social Order Committee. That meant, the social order here means the economic order. John Woolman had once said that the seeds of war lie in our social order, by which he meant that war is carried on with inordinate desire for gain, with unnecessary international commerce in which there's rivalry, and in a primitive way he anticipated some modern pacifists like Norman Angell that thought that he could end war by pointing out the economic futility of it, and in Woman's case the economic wickedness that brought it on. So these groups, in the time of the First World War, began inquiring into the relation between international war and the whole industrial system, nationally as well as individually. And they've done some rather interesting discussion along various lines. One thing they did was to enlighten other Quaker employers about the liberal policy that some Quaker employers had reached. And that was a good educated maker. As you would expect, they felt a concern about investments. After all, a great deal of the economic world is carried on by investing money, or lending money, as they would call it, in various kinds of enterprises. And these Quaker businessmen, either in their personal fortunes or the money they invested for the business or as trustees for Quaker concerns, were anxious to be as pure and straightforward in the places where they put this money for investment. And in order to do that, they had to look up carefully not the financial security, not the return on the investment, but the conditions under which the industry was done. And they would send people to look, let's say, at the copper mines of a certain part of the country to see whether these mines had a decent employment policy. And if they didn't, they would discourage friends from investing in that particular form of stock. Auxiliary to this group, there was a group of women that were studying the problems of economics with which they have most to do, such things as the employment of domestic help, and of course many women have money to invest, so that the women's problems group ran along parallel with its other group. And then I might mention in passing that the American Friends Service Committee, founded in 1917, and mainly in connection with the problem of war, soon found itself drawn in to a concern for industrial situations. In many ways, industry is a form of cold war, competitive, like war, ruthless, like war. Wholesale in its effect on people without too much regard for what happens to them. The American Congress can pass a tariff law and throw thousands of foreign employees out of work just by a stroke of the pen. By a prohibitive tariff, let's say, on Swiss watches. And the watchmakers in Switzerland suffered. Well, it's partly because of this analogy, but also partly because of their experience, that the American Friends Service Committees find itself involved in some of these questions. For example, a very bad strike in North Carolina in 1920, in which the children were just as hungry as they were in any war-devastated country, children of the employees. The Friends were asked by the National Council of Churches to go down there and distribute relief, thinking that maybe being Christian, that the Christian employers would be willing that they should do it. Arbitration between labor and capital. A good many Friends have been found have gotten employment in that area. Unemployment, time of depression. One period when Friends were asked to take over on behalf of the government the children in all the soft coal fields. This was the area where the Depression first struck. West Virginia and Kentucky and other adjacent areas where this re-employment, experimental work in re-employment. We have in Western Pennsylvania a town which was a coal town which was rehabilitated, and a factory put there, nothing connected with the coal industry, to help diversify the industry for some labor people who've had it very difficult to move around, who had a seasonal unemployment and could fill up the gap by if there was a factory there in which they could work out of season. And then in the field of education, one will have to say that the Friends were anxious that young people should know about these problems and know about them not through the classroom. So they began exposing young people in summer work camps into labor or industry problems so that they would know something about them. A whole series of work camps held in places of economic tension. I remember being at one in Flint, Michigan, where automobile bodies are made. Time of very serious tension there. And just by working there and building a playground or something like that, they were exposed in this educational way. More recently, young people have been put together in summer groups and spend the summer finding a job and working on a job. Very interesting experience. Sometimes takes all summer to find a job. But they club their earnings together and support themselves and learning what it's like to be unemployed and to be not too skillful, perhaps, and look for a job is a form of education. Well, this is the expression of a Quaker concern. I didn't put down my last heading. Unexpected results was my last heading, and I won't take much time except to quote from a man named Ogg, who says that it's very odd how disqualified people, disinherited people, can often make a great contribution. And he mentions the dissenters in England and all the things, the disabilities they suffered. He says of the many branches of dissent, the Quakers provide a good illustration of the consequences that may follow from partial disability. They had thriven on persecution meted out to them and were regarded by respectable Englishmen as lunatics. Resolutely opposed to war, their ironmongers and iron founders refused to make or sell armaments, preferring to supply a rapidly expanding market with cutlery, sickles and domestic articles, an enterprise which incidentally proved very profitable. An even more important principle was that of paying their debts. This might seem irrelevant today when there are so many means of enforcing the debt and it is not fashionable to boast of eluding one's creditors. Against such a background, the Quakers must indeed have seemed odd. Another oddity was their objection to oaths. an objection explained by this, that among their contemporaries never were there so many oath takers nor so many perjurers. Quakers proved to the surprise of many that honesty pays. It is not too much to claim that their example greatly stimulated that steady improvement in commercial morality without which England would never become a great nation. After all, so subtle is the distinction, the lunacy of yesterday often proves to be no more than the sanity of today. But the prudent and the successful leave to others the ungrateful task of effecting this evolution. This is on the Economic History of England by Professor Hogg. I think most of you got your list of topics, and I have some more here. Thank you for these papers.